Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. So big welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Hello, everyone at home. Good to be back.
Yeah, well, it's marvellous to have you here, particularly we've had another busy week, lots of corporate reports, trading updates, yeah, and Christmas parties. And I think on behalf of both of us, there's a big thanks, a big shout out to Kevin Taylor for treating us to a claret Christmas lunch to remember, one of a lifetime. I think we both were suffering after that, but it was absolutely marvellous, wasn't it, Paul?
It was amazing. Yeah, thanks to Kevin for that. So yeah, it took me 2 days to recover.
I was in bed on Sunday. It was marvellous. I know, it was great. Anyway, before we run through some stocks, have you been buying or selling anything over the past 7 days?
Not that I can recall. No, I did a big buying splurge the week before. So no, just sitting and watching things going down mostly this week.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, well, we've got a question on experiential leisure. We've got from Keith asking us about XP Factory, which I think came out with a trading update. These guys own the Escape Hunt franchise in the UK, and also bought a few years back Boom Battle Bars, which is the experiential leisure. I don't know whether you got any thoughts on this one. I think one of the divisions, the Escape Hunt, was doing well, but Boom Battle Bars had, I think the popularity of axe throwing had diminished somewhat. What was your take on it?
Yeah, no, I was a bit disappointed with these H1 results from, I think it was H1 results from XPF issued yesterday. I did quite a thorough write-up of it on my Substack, so that's available to premium subscribers. And a bit disappointing, I've got to say. As you correctly say, the escape rooms side of the business is doing well. That's generating positive like-for-like sales, very consistent returns on that, surprisingly, but it's a nice little business. Yeah, but the Boom Battle Bars are really struggling. The like-for-likes were down in H1 and have actually got worse in the most recent 9 weeks or 11 weeks, I think it might have been, down almost 10% like-for-like. Well, when you take the operationally geared effect of that on very high margins, because remember, it's not just drinks and food, it's gaming revenue, which is 100% gross margin, basically. So that's quite a nasty operationally geared hit, I think. So although the broker maintained the forecast, I suspect this is probably heading for a profit warning. They're waiting to see what the crucial Christmas period is like, I think, but I don't see them hitting the current year forecast. So I think it's likely to probably report around break even, I think, which is not in itself is not bad, because obviously there's a big depreciation charge, so it is actually generating cash. They're now talking about doing buybacks as well and slowing down the rollout of new sites, which has unnerved me a bit, actually. So I'm not as keen as I was on this one, but I've decided to hold because I think it's a sitting duck now for a takeover bid from one of the larger hospitality groups who could strip out a load of costs. And obviously, if they put the buying of the drinks onto their own, you know, say if Weatherspoon's bid for it, they could probably put 6 or 7 million quid on the bottom line instantly just by using their bulk buying power for drinks. So I think it's, I'm hoping we'll get an exit through a takeover bid.
Yeah, well, what's causing the problem at Boom Battle Bras? Is it oversupply of experiential leisure? Is it sort of like the concept's a bit stale, you know? Or alternatively, because I mean, you've got other experiential sort of like leisure companies. I mean, you know, you take the gold standard Hollywood Bowl. They're doing all right, actually. I mean, they struggled a bit with the hotter weather, but, you know, I mean, that's throwing you know, rocks down an alley and sort of like hitting some Skittles. And that seems to be doing pretty well now in the winter.
Yeah, I think it's down to competitive pressures. I think there've been a lot of new entrants into experiential leisure, I think it's quite clear there's oversupply now. They've mentioned competitive pressures in the past, and the broker Cavendish flagged that. They said it's very intensely competitive, that sector. And I think you're right. There's only so many times you want to go and do axe throwing. I would suggest once. You know, it's not something I would want to do again. I think they probably need to do a refresh on some of the sites. Overall, as I say, if you work on the basis of assuming it's operating around break even, I think that's fairly realistic. I don't see it hitting the forecast for this year or next year, for that matter. But HSBC have just granted it a £20 million borrowing facility, which is double the size of the previous one with Barclays. So the bank is obviously very impressed with the business. So who knows? And I think management have done an amazing job at XP Factory, given, you know, all other small hospitality businesses have failed, haven't they? You know, Brighton Pier, you had that thing run by the woman off Dragon's Den. She ran that into the ground. I can't remember what that was called, but it was absolute rubbish. And then you had various eateries, they threw a ton of money at sites and they can't make any money from them. So I think in that context of utter chaos over the last 6 years, XP Factory, I think management have done a brilliant job there with very little capital as well.
Is there sort of like diminished appetite from youngsters at all? Because obviously you hear about them, you know, wanting to sort of clean the lifestyle, not going down for drinks and this sort of stuff. And therefore, you know, there's less people going into these Boom Battle Bars who are the younger generation because, you know, they're going to do other things, which is sort of like, I don't know, have a non-alcoholic drink somewhere else or I don't know, go online.
Yeah, there could be part of that, couldn't they? But there again, the ordinary, the standard pubs groups are you know, generally trading pretty well at the moment and reporting positive like-for-likes. I think it's just competition. I think there's a lot of copycat type formats out there for experiential leisure, and it's challenging, definitely, yeah, for at the moment for XPF. So a bit disappointing on that one, but I'm still going to hold because I think the business is worth is so cheap, and I think there's such hidden value in it to an acquirer. I think it's likely to attract a bid, say from Weatherspoons or someone like that, because it would take them years and cost them a fortune to replicate it. So why not just pick this thing up for 20 million market cap, you know?
Or lower. Okay,
don't say that.
Okay, let's move to stay in the same sector in leisure. We've got Andrew, who's asking about luxury cinema chain Everyman. I think did they come out with a trading update today? The shares have absolutely been hammered. Anyway, they're down 24%. I think my two daughters actually have occasionally been to there. I think they sort of go into recline in these sort of like bed style seats and have food and drinks brought to them. But I know it's not that cheap. Anyway, the shares, I mean it's just a one way chart, unfortunately, at the moment. I don't know any thoughts on this one at all.
Yeah, we've been very negative on this for years. It just doesn't work. If you look at the number, I mean, the format, as you say, is nice for the customers and it gets good reviews. It's a bit like Time Out, you know, the food markets company. Lovely format, customers love it, but it doesn't make any money. And Everyman is in exactly the same category. It's loss-making, it's got too much debt. They're rolling out a format that doesn't work, that is not financially viable, just the same as what Time Out is doing. So, yeah, I've been on my lowest colour of red on Everyman for years now. It's just not viable. And they put out a profit warning today. I haven't got that in front of me, but yeah, that's obviously if the shares are down 25%, it's a profit warning, isn't it? Yeah. So I wouldn't touch it personally. I think this is eventually likely to go to zero. It's just not viable. It doesn't make any money.
And just in terms of more broadly, cinema chains, I mean, I know we've had streaming for ages, but it seems to be the death, doesn't it, of cinema chains, because you've got Netflix who are releasing its own movies directly to its customers. Mm. They're not putting them into, you know, onto the box office, etc. You just wonder whether cinema chains are going to go a bit like, I don't know, theatres, you know, musical theatres. You go for a special experience, something like, I don't know, Taylor Swift doing a, you know, sort of like a concert, you know, and she beams it to just specific sort of theatres where it's something quite unique and different, or ABBA Voyage or something. But the the longevity of having the concept of cinemas where you used to get packed, you know, pack them. I remember as a kid, I used to be standing around the block around the ABC cinema in Warsaw waiting to go into Jaws. And then I'd get to the front and the guy would say, "On your bike, mate, you're not 18. Get out," you know, sort of stuff. But that's gone long done. There's too many other things, isn't there, with streaming? What's your view anyway of cinemas, just the concept?
Very good points. Yeah, I can't argue with any of that. I mean, I'd need to see numbers to you know, in terms of attendance, you know, levels over the long term, whether they've gone down or whatever. I don't know. I mean, personally, I hate going to the cinema. I think it's just a thoroughly unpleasant experience, being surrounded by people, phones lighting up and coughing and crisp packets constantly being crunched and... no, not five.
Or even people eating samosas as well there, Paul.
yes. I just quickly wolfed one down before we came on air. That's what Paul's alluding to. So, no, I mean, I just look at the numbers with all of these things. And if you look at, they're very keen on quoting EBITDA at every man. However, it's got something like 100 million of fixed assets. So there's a big depreciation charge, which you can't ignore, because that is money that was spent on actually kitting out these cinemas, and they're not generating a return from it. And then, of course, they've got hefty finance charges as well. So the EBITDA numbers are total fantasy with this particular company. It's loss-making at the PBT level, and it's got too much debt, got 24 million net debt as well. I think they'll struggle to pay any of that debt back, actually. So no, I think I wouldn't touch it at any price. I think the shares eventually might even go to zero.
Yeah, well, if anybody in the audience has got a positive view on cinemas or Everyman, please put them into the chat box and I'll read them out, because I think we're both, Paul and I, are struggling to find a bull case for cinemas in broad terms.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to sort of technology. Let's go to electronic monitoring and solutions and all things ankle tags and bracelets for prisoners. We've got Amanda asking about big technologies. Came out with a positive trading update, but didn't say anything about the long-standing potential litigation with their ex or former CEO, Sarah Murray. I don't know what your take on it at all was, Amanda.
we looked at this, I think it was, might have been on Monday or something when an announcement came out. My thing's not loading up, so, but from memory, they said it was trading in line, which is okay. Now, one thing I did pick up on, I looked back at the last balance sheet and I discovered that in the last, I think, half year, they made a provision. They took a charge through the P&L for 43 million quid for legal costs. So that has that means if that is all used for legal costs, that's about half the cash pile. The cash pile is about 95 million-ish. So almost half of that is earmarked for legal costs. So that is a big issue, actually. And for that reason, I don't know how you can value the shares, because you could get an announcement tomorrow, couldn't you, saying, "Oh, we've reached an out-of-court settlement with Sarah Murray, it's all resolved," or it could rumble on for a long time. And given that their customers are law enforcement bodies, I would have imagined that they would take a fairly dim view of quite serious legal allegations that were being thrown around, and all done, you know, on the RNS, so it's all publicly done. You know, if you were Home Office or something in Ireland or whatever, would you really want to transact with a group where all this shenanigans have been happening? I don't know. What do you think, Paul?
I think existing customers will be okay, but it's new ones. I'll just put a if they're putting in a bid, I would struggle to sign a contract at the moment with so much flux and uncertainty associated with the shares. I mean, you and I last year when they first had this announced the problem with the CEO did very well because we bought, I think, around about the first dip, wasn't it? Wasn't it? It was around about April time.
60p, I think.
Yeah, you got 60 and I got about 65p. On the basis that Sarah Murray had left, they'd put a new management team. In fact, it was Ian Johnson, who's very well respected from NIOCS and being injected from Harwood Capital. On the basis that then put a sort of like a fire break between the old management and the new management, and the company would go after monies from the old management if they would, if those allegations proved correct, i.e., such that when the buddy shareholders who are trying to claim money against big technologies, when those funds have to be paid, that compensation has to be paid, then that would be back to back against the wealth of Sarah Murray and anybody else who's also had wrongdoing. So that would be a saving, for the company. It'd be a cleaning out. But now that Sarah Murray has put on a new director onto the board, a non-exec, and they've changed the chairman, I do wonder whether that whole board is totally independent from Sarah Murray at the moment. Yeah. Well, it clearly isn't in terms of one non-exec, but whether it is a fire break between the two. And that's what I think means you can't value it because when you look at the court documents, they've put a total figure freezing Sarah Murray's assets of $320 million. Now, wow. If anything gets anywhere near that and you get a mismatch on liquidity between what's being claimed by the buddy's shareholders, what then has to be paid out by big technologies. And then for some reason, because the board is, influenced by the basically by the old CEO, or she might actually be, totally innocent. We don't know. But let's be clear about it. From what the company said, they've categorically thrown her under a bus. But if you can't then claim those funds back from the old CEO, well, that means somebody's got to pay for the bill and it's going to be big technologies. And I'm with you. I just think 300 million is a scary number. And I don't think you'll get anywhere near that. However, with legal costs, you could find that big cash balance, which you rightly point out, 95 million quid, whittles away pretty quick, actually.
Yeah, that's right. I came to a similar conclusion. It's just totally impossible to value at the moment. Mm. Because you're guessing, aren't you? Really, what the outcome might be, and that's a perfectly good investment strategy. If you kind of work through, well, what's the percentage likelihood of this happening or that happening? So you can do value things that way. But for me, it's too uncertain. So I'm just staying away.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Okay, we've got a lovely question from Paul the Parrot. He's asking that the market doesn't feel as though it's in festival Christmas mood, the Santa rally. So when do you think we'll have a kickstart of a rally? What will be the trigger?
Oh, crumbs, who knows? I mean, these things just happen, don't they? And the press always fit a reason around it as to why it happened. But I've no idea. I don't know if there'll be a Santa rally or not. I try not to predict short-term market movements because you nearly always end up with egg on your face, don't you?
But next year, what might trigger it?
Oh, next year. Well, I'm very bullish on the potential for a cyclical recovery. So I know I'm a bit of a stuck record on this. It didn't really happen in 2026 because of the tariffs disruption that nobbled the first half of the year. And then, there might be a bit of background noise here. We're preparing for a Christmas party. Another one. Well, so I think, now the budget's out the way, everybody can plan, and there are a few green shoots around. Nearly all companies are reporting in line with trading. We've had a flurry of profit warnings, but I think that there's a chance of a bit of a cyclical recovery in 2026, I think. And yet you can buy numerous shares with which are priced as if they're never going to recover. So I think it's very attractive UK small cap value right now.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you could look at interest rates. You've got the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates tonight, hopefully. And then in similar fashion, you should have the Bank of England. I think it was about an 80% probability that Andrew Bailey will cut interest rates by a quarter point next Wednesday or Thursday. And if that happens, that's a good backdrop for small caps because they operate at the front end of the yield curve. So they'll see all the benefits of those short-term cuts. And then you look at the latest fund flows out of unit trusts, open-ended unit trusts, and October and November saw record outflows as I think what you highlighted was basically, you know, people taking their 25% tax-free lump sums out of their SIPs. That made a massive difference. And so you've got that then huge exodus. Now you've got people who have got a bunch of cash on the sidelines and having to think about what to do with this, having just taken it all out. Now, I would not be surprised if we see two interest rate cuts. People have a good sort of like festive, sort of like, you know, a couple of clarets, to say the least, a couple of meats and Moses. And it makes them sort of like, you know, decide, okay, well, I will put a proportion of my funds into small caps. So, you could start seeing a nice little rally at the start of the year as long as we don't get any major problems. And I'm still hoping, I mean, I know I've got it so wrong at the start of the year. I'm still hoping eventually we're going to get a Ukraine ceasefire. And if we do that, if we ever do that, that means Europe is going to have to go gangbuster because it's not only spending massive amounts on defense, it's going to have to spend hundreds of billions on rebuilding Ukraine and protecting themselves. And Britain's in a good position because we're pretty good at construction and we're pretty good at defense. So, don't be surprised if the sentiment to the awful sentiment to small caps does actually see some glimmers of life, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that's all very good. And I mean, you know, we often talk about the housing market. And I recall when we had that excellent Zoom with Gleeson's CFO and CEO, he was saying, look, all we need is a little bit more confidence, another interest rate cut. And he says there's loads of pent up demand. I think they're quietly optimistic actually for the future, but he did say it needs a trigger. They need to get the budget out of the way. Well, that's done. People can plan, you know, an average working person is earning 20-odd% more now than they were, say, 3 years ago. So which just makes house prices a lot more affordable than they were. And very good mortgage deals are available. So I'm quietly optimistic, actually. I don't see things getting any worse anyway, unless there's some horrendous external shock.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear about it. If you do get that ceasefire in Ukraine, just think what energy costs are going to do. Oil's going to decrease. Gas prices, they're going to decrease. They're not going up anyway. And that means, you know, we're a net importer of energy. We're going to do all right. Europe is a massive net importer. And those are the two dog parts of the world, the global economy in terms of, or the Western economy in terms of growth. So, you know, I mean, there are some nice little triggers, but the biggest thing is sentiment, isn't it? And so, you know,
definitely. Yeah. And also it's the US and tech in particular have just been a vortex for investor money. I mean, I've lost some subscribers this year who've just messaged me and said, I love your content, Paul, but I'm just, you know, I've given up on UK small caps because I look at the American market and see these tech things going to the moon. So you have to ask yourself, don't you? Do you buy into a tech boom, and you know that you're overpaying for popular shares, and the music's going to stop at some point. It always does with booms. And or do you go for stuff that's dirt cheap, paying you a 6-8% dividend yield with net cash on the balance sheet? I'll always go for the value stuff rather than the, you know, jumping on a bandwagon that's probably about to come off the rails. So, or not far away from it anyway.
Yeah. No, I think you raise a really good point because, I mean, that's the other thing for next year. If you do actually see the bubble in AI in America popping, then your portfolio, you need to basically sort of limit that blast zone that could hit, because it isn't just those really highly inflated ones. It's anything else going on, you know, running off the back of it, the picks and shovels guys. So, you know, sort of like try and minimize the radius, the damage, the explosive sort of like, you know, zone in your portfolio. So have a really good look at it.
Yeah, anyway, and just a quick, I agree with all of that. One additional point is that when the Trump tariff, that huge plunge happened in April or February, March, My REITs, my property REIT shares, were rock solid. They didn't go down at all. So I think that is interesting because if the tech bubble or boom, I think boom is probably better than bubble because we don't know it's a bubble. I think that if the tech boom does eventually break down, you know, I certainly think REITs are a very good safe haven because they tend to be just rock solid. So that's worth bearing in mind.
Yeah, no, it is. Okay, good. Let's go to the building sector. We've got Drew. He's asking about Topps Tiles. Any thoughts on the trading update and new CEO and new CFO? These guys, I think, are the number one tile distributor and providers in the UK, actually, for sort of kitchens, bathrooms and floors and all kinds of stuff, I think. Anyway, what's your sort of view on it?
I like it. I bought some of these recently, and actually I did a 10-minute pitch for it on Mellow, actually, a couple of days ago. So, yes, I bought recently about 42, 43p. I thought the update was good, actually. I don't understand why the market sold off on results day recently, because the figures were pretty good. It's making about £9 million PBT for the year to September 2025, which is lower than the historical numbers going back a few years. But, you know, it's tough macro, as we know. But what is interesting about it, as you say, new CEO, new CFO, both with impressive CVs, who have got a very good turnaround plan called something like 365, I think they're calling it. And they've set out a medium-term plan to more than triple profits. They reckon they can get profits up to about 30 million. And they've literally given chapter and verse on how they're going to do it. That's in the most recent results statements that people can read up on that. And the new CFO has an excellent CV, really quite senior positions at Next, Boots and Watches of Switzerland. So again, why would she want to join an £85 million top tiles retailer with a CV like that? She must see good upsize and wants to probably load up with share options nice and cheap. Balance sheet's okay. So, and you're only paying about 9x PE for it. So bottom of the cycle earnings, probably. You're getting a credible turnaround in for free, basically, the cyclical upside. So, yeah, I really like it. And they're buying up competitors from the receivers. They've just bought Fired Earth, basically, they paid £3 million for it, which was the value of its inventories. And that is a very well-known brand. And they picked up another chain of tiles companies where I think they cherry-picked the best sites from the receivers. So I think this could, with a bit of patience, I'd be looking to maybe double or even triple my money on this. But I'm not saying it's going to go up instantly. I think this is a medium-term thing. But, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it trades at, just over 10x PE, over 7% dividend yield. And, yeah, it bought CTD, didn't it? Tiles, yes, out of administration about 18 months, and it went through the competition authorities. And you just piqued my interest there, Paul, because this is a classic example of, you know, some of the competitors going out of business and just leaving it to it's the last man standing. The strongest get stronger. And you're right. I mean, there should be no reason why they can't triple their profits over the next 5 years, because they're picking up market share left hand over fist. And if we do get a cyclical recovery as well, then that's a great observation, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think it looks promising. So I quite like Topps Tiles. Yeah.
Good. Okay, we've got Richard Leppington. He's asking about insolvency practitioner Begbies Traynor. Been around for ages. I think it's sort of expanded out to other sort of financial services, things like forensic accounting and turnarounds and a bit of corporate finance as well. But anyway, what's your view on Begbies? Did they come out with a trading update or some results just recently?
They did, yes. I forget which day it was on, but I can remember it. It was in line, basically. Everything's going fine. Now, their PR guy, Reg Hoare, he rang me up, emailed me and said, Paul, you've always struggled with the deemed remuneration charge in the accounts. And I gave up trying to understand it in the end, which is not like me. There are very few accounting issues that I can't. Deferred tax is the other one I've never understood. But he said statutory PBT is now rising very strongly because those adjustments are now washing through the system for previous acquisitions. So the accounts are getting cleaner and easier to understand. I think. It's very, very good business insolvency work because there are huge barriers to entry and they make really good profit margins. And yet you can buy Begbies on a PE of only about 10. And they've got years worth of work in the pipeline. I think it's just too cheap. I think it's the wrong price. And you get a decent dividend yield as well. And as you say, it's making small bolt-on acquisitions. For example, they bought an auctioneers. So they are now first in the queue for asset disposals because they own the auctioneer. You know, things like that. They've done really sensible bolt-on acquisitions. So, no, I think this should be £1.50 plus. So I think at the current level, I think the market's offering us a bargain.
Mm. How much does it depend on sort of like the working capital cycle? Because they obviously have really long debtors because they only get paid once an insolvency is actually finished. And also how dependent is it on sort of key individuals? You know, it's a people service type business.
Well, on the working capital cycle, you're absolutely right. They do have. They can get stage payments. I don't think they have. I don't think they necessarily get the entire bill paid at the end. You know, I think they can do interim billing, but it is quite considerable, the working capital. But the banks lend to insolvency practitioners to fund the work, basically. So there's never a problem. I think the bank debt might, the bank facility might even be unsecured, and there's not much of it. It has a pretty stable balance sheet, so no issues there, I would say. And as for the key individuals, yes, you're right. In insolvency work, I'm sure there are probably a small number of rainmakers, you know, partners who generate all the business. It's all about having relationships with the banks so that you get the jobs, really. So, I don't know if that's disclosed anywhere, but I'm sure you're right. It's probably dependent on a small number of key individuals. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it, for somebody to acquire it? Because if you're an insolvency practitioner and you acquire Begbies Traynor, then obviously, and Rick leaves with a lot of money, the CEO and founder of it, then you've just lost half of your name, haven't you? And he could. I mean, I know you'd have non-compete clauses for 2 years, but it's actually quite a difficult one to retain that IPR within the business such that you can continue winning new assignments from the banks or from anybody who's the main creditor. And what that means if you're an investor, if it's a people business, is that you don't usually put a high multiple on those businesses because it's not going to attract a bid. 10 times PE, I mean, it's counter-cyclical. It acts as a good hedge on somebody's portfolio, no doubt about it. And it could go through, you know, it's quite a big boom time over the next 2 or 3 years as a lot of dead wood is removed from the market. I just find it quite difficult to put a high multiple on an insolvency practitioner.
Yeah, no, all very good points, well made. I think PE of 10 and a 4 or 5% dividend yield is towards the low side, I think, for what is a quality business. But it would be interesting to find out what Rick Traynor's intentions are, because he's still an owner manager. So yeah, that would be a key question to ask management if we speak to them. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, we've got part of the person in the audience. We've got Andy Archtop, or I've never seen him before. Anyway, excellent question. He's asking about applied nutrition, which I think is basically the sort of protein shakes type of muscle building, body building type powders. They have their own brand, so I guess they probably compete against people like, I don't know, My Protein from the Hut Group. Anyway, they floated a couple of years back, I think, but the shares have done tremendously well, actually. They've really gained some muscles. What's your view?
Really, really impressed with this one. We need everybody in the city, give us more floats like this one. Decent, well-financed companies, owner-managed, I think, with this one again. Very, very. They put out an update saying I think they're going to be about 10% ahead of market expectations, which is always good. The only thing I would say is we were more positive on it when it was about £1.30 a share. We were amber green, which is moderately positive. But now it's kind of £2.20-ish. It's gone from a PE of 13 up to a PE of about 20. So I think it's probably up with events. But the key area to research for this, I think, for anyone considering it, is do they have some sort of sustainable competitive advantage or not? Because as you say, I mean, I've never bought any protein shakes, but there must be all sorts of competition. So if Applied Nutrition is just a flash in the pan with its brands, that would be my. But if it's got sustainable long-term advantages and it's going to carry on growing, it could be a strong buy, couldn't it? So I think people need to do research on the market and the products.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm surprised actually you don't actually try the powders out there, Paul. I thought given your sort of like physique, I thought you'd be one of their biggest customers. But I'm with you. For a 22, it's obviously a very popular and, you know, sort of like brand and going very well. And it could well be a takeout target as well. So you're right. It's probably at the higher side of its multiple, but if it continues with its earnings increases and expand and beating expectations, then you've got that earnings power underneath it, and you'll see the valuation then come down in future years, so it will grow into it. But you're right. I mean, the shares have done fabulous, isn't it? So if I held them, there'd be no reason at the moment to not continue, to perfectly honest, I'd say. I mean, I wouldn't be. If you've got a big position, then you might want a top slice, but it's, you know. There's no reason. The momentum's moving up, and it's probably the only one in it. I suppose there is, you know, the Hook Group as well, but you know, it is a unique pure play in sort of bodybuilding protein formulas and shakes and stuff. Then there's probably quite a big lot of white space around the world that it can then, you know, put its brands in. But I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a question of finding out, isn't it? Doing the more detailed research. Why is it outperforming?
Yeah.
I mean, it's great that it is. And is that sustainable? Those are really the only questions to ask, aren't there?
Yeah.
When people do the research in more detail. Yeah.
Okay, good. We've got Richard. He's asking about Ashtead Technologies, the oil and gas services business or marine services business based out of Aberdeen. I think about half of its business is oil and gas and the rest is sort of renewables around the world. They they rent out specialist parts and submarines and stuff for offshore exploration and for production and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, he says the shares are shorted up to 8%. Any views on the company at all?
I don't think we've looked at this recently, actually. But just looking at the headline numbers, I mean, it's on a very, really, this was a growth stock on a high rating a while back, wasn't it? But it's now derated right down to a PE of only 7.7 times. I think it's got quite a lot of debt. Yeah, here we are. Debt is 51% of the market cap, according to ShareScope. And you've got a negligible dividend yield and a slightly negative balance sheet. So I haven't really got any more than that on this one. I haven't seen any news from it recently, but I can look that up while you... Do you want to take over, Paul, and give your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say have a look at the oil and gas sector in totality, because there's, if you look at some of the, I mean, who knows when it comes to macro views, but most of the merchant banks are saying oil is going to decline next year because you've got a surplus of supply, particularly places like Guyana coming on some enormous fields which are being brought on. Plus you've got Saudi now, or effectively OPEC, pumping more oil as well. You've still got the shale guys out in the US pumping. And if you ever get a resolution to Russia, and part of that solution is allowing Russia then to become part of, you know, to take all the sanctions off, or certainly the oil and gas sanctions off, which I think America is going to agree with because it wants to reduce its inflation. Then if you get all that coming together, then you're going to see the, you know, the price of Brent coming down probably into the 50s. Now, if you do that, then that's not going to be good for oil and gas services companies, because they're high beta plays on the oil price. So I can understand why the shares are weak. But likewise with you, Paul, you know, I would say, you know, they're very, very cheap. And a lot of the bad news is already in there. But having 8% of a short position, it says to me, if they can outperform, then you're going to get a big short covering. But it also says to me, the only people I see who are shorting in the UK are really smart investors, actually. They are. Mm. They have really gone down into the detail. You get a few sort of like, you know, cavalier guys out in the States, because you hear short people have shorted 60% of the stock, but rarely do you get over 10% in the UK, because it's those real hedge funds. So I would, if before buying any, I would seriously understand the bear case on this one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, while you were talking, I found my notes. Yeah, the debt is an issue. It had 132 million of net debt at June, which was 1.6 times EBITDA, which is not crisis levels, but it's getting a bit on the high side. There was some decent director buying on the 27th of August this year. The chairman spent 115 grand buying shares. So that is quite encouraging if you follow that. You did have a profit warning in July. Then interim results were put out on the 26th of August. They look all right. EPS was up 14% and in line outlook. I can't see why it would be so heavily shorted. That is quite surprising. Yeah, it's a good point to flag up there.
Yeah. I would, the only thing I would say is that when I remember reading the original IPO document, and it was listed by some not venture capitalists, some private equity guys. Right. And I remember reading a lot of the equipment, the fleet, which they hire out, was actually quite old and being depreciated. And I do wonder whether there's a bit of a sort of like a lot of CapEx that need to be able to, you know, to be spent to upgrade to the newest technologies. Now, that could just be totally off. I really don't know. But that would be the only thing I would say the short guys are probably honing in on is actually, you know, the EBITDA figure. Yes, it's only five times. EBITDA is only five times. But actually, you're going to have to spend a shed load more than the depreciation charge in CapEx going forward to renew all your fleet. But I'd have to speak to the CEO and to really understand that.
That's a really good point, actually, because I remember when the share was absolutely going up and up and up and up a few years back, I went through the accounts and said, well, where's the equipment? There was hardly anything. The fixed assets were really small. And one of my readers at the time, I think, said, oh, they kind of they rent the equipment and then they rent it on, apparently. So apparently some of the equipment they don't actually own. They just sort of sublet the some of the equipment. So, yeah, that what you're saying about CapEx is probably the main area to investigate, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. We got Steve. He's asking about consumer healthcare products company Venture Life that had been largely ignored by the market for about 3 years. And I think it hit something like 24p in October 23. And now is almost tripled since then because it's sort of like a metamorphosized. It's sort of sold its manufacturing business to a Belgian company and then has just sold some non-core brands, dental and Ultratex for about 4 or 5 million quid this week. Anyway, the shares, as I say, have done very well. What's your take on it? They trade at still only just over five times EBITDA, which looks pretty damn cheap, actually.
Yeah, I've really warmed to this over the last few years because I was always a bit suspicious about it. It had a rather strange history and some funny thing. Management sold a lot of their shares right at the top at the same time as doing a fundraise, and it was slightly odd, this share, but the figures now are really excellent. I mean, I think the cash pile, they got a terrific price for something they disposed of a while ago, and I think the cash pile now is about half the market cap, something like that, unless they've done a more recent acquisition that I'm not aware of, perhaps. I don't follow it that closely, but I know we are moderately positive on it. Yeah, it's it looks quite interesting. I think you've been positive on this one before, haven't you, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the valuation has just been, you know, ignored by the business, and it's taken a couple of sort of like unbundling transactions to release it. And you know, when you look at consumer healthcare products, they've got high sort of niche attractions and lots of pricing power. The company that's left is basically their core power products are basically they're going to target 10% plus organic growth. Now, if they get anywhere near that, well, even if they don't get anywhere near that, they're currently the company trades at, you know, go forward of about, I think it's about just between five and just over five times EBITDA. They sold their declining or flat mouthwash business for 11 times EBITDA, plus as another sort of like price comparison, you had Alliance Pharma, who got bought by D-Bay for about 10 times EBITDA, and their sales were declining. And they still got 10 times EBITDA. So for a company that should be that is aiming to sort of like, you know, do 10% plus organic growth with their power brands to be on just over 5 times EBITDA sounds like a bit of a bargain to me. And even though the shares have gone very well, I just think, you know, there's doing too many people in the city who have basically just ignored it to their cost, actually.
Yeah, you're right. And then, yeah, I've just found my notes on it. We had an announcement yesterday. It sold two brands, Ultradex and Dentil brands, for up to $4.5 million cash. So quite a small transaction there. But yeah, no, I agree with you. So we've been positive on it since May. When they announced they sold the CDMO business for €62 million. That was the blockbuster deal that really transformed it. Shares have continued rising since. And it's, like you say, it's still actually good value, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, let's move sectors. We've got to go to defense. We've got Greg. He's asking about Cohort. Now, did they actually release some results or a trading update today? They basically do services to the defense companies. I think they're a bit like Kinetic. They have a lot of sort of like fingers in pies supplying really sophisticated knowledge and capability into a whole army of different defense things, like surveillance into electronic warfare for sonar as well. I mean, you name it, I think these guys are in it. But anyway, the shares have dropped a bit actually today, I think.
Yeah, you're right. It came out with H1 results this morning. I had a look at those first thing. Not very good, actually. The EPS in H1 was down 19%, but they've got a massive order book of $605 million. It's four or five defense-focused businesses, which are largely autonomous. And it said it's got 96% visibility for the full year. So it is looking at an H2 weighting of EPS being much, much higher in H2, but it does look as if it's got that visibility of the revenues already booked. But it is a risk that something might, you know, if a big contract misses the year end date for delivery or something, then you could potentially have a bit of a risk. So, yeah, I think the shares have come, like a lot of defense shares, they went probably a bit too high earlier this year or the year before. Yeah, it peaked at about £17.40, didn't it? Now they're £10.59. So it doesn't look amazingly cheap. Forward PE is about 18 and a half.
I know you had a good chat to the guy, didn't you, a few years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did a podcast with this CEO. I thought he was very, very good. He was saying they just kind of let the subsidiaries get on with it. It's not micromanaged from head office. They're separate businesses. But, yeah, I came away with a very positive impression. But the shares, you know, 500-odd million market cap, maybe they got a bit ahead of themselves. But looks like it's coming back into a more sensible valuation now, I'd say.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got Top Dogger. He's asking about RWS Holdings, the translation boys. I know we've chatted about this whole sector, about whether it's going to get disintermediated by AI and intimate transactions. Have you got any couple of quick words on it at all?
I can't remember that we've looked at this recently. My page is a bit slow. It's just loading up. Here we are. 28th of October, it put out, bottom end of forecast. So it dropped 10% to 85p. Do you know what the shares are now, Paul?
I'm just looking at it now. Yeah. 78.
Oh, okay. So they've carried on going down a bit. It looks superficially cheap, this one, doesn't it? But as you say, it's one of these shares which is derated because the market fears that AI might be a threat to it. Whether it is or isn't is still really unknown, I would say. So yeah. It's just in that bucket where, a bit like Future, you know, the company called Future, F-U-T-R? That's a similar one where it's dirt cheap, but nobody knows if AI is going to kill it or be a glancing blow. This is the trouble. It's you're getting a similar sort of thing with the price comparison websites and Rightmove and Baltic Classified and Auto Trader, which we've talked a lot about recently. Excuse me. We just don't really know if they're going to be damaged with all this. I know you're very bullish on AI, aren't you? I'm a bit more skeptical. I just haven't seen anything really that's been significantly changed by AI in terms of other companies reporting. You know, yeah. Everyone says, "Oh, yes, we're using AI," but you think they kind of would say that, wouldn't they? Because it's fashionable. But yeah. I haven't seen any business models turned upside down by AI yet. Anyway, so I'm a little bit more skeptical on it, maybe.
Yeah, it's cheap. I think it's cheap for a reason. It wouldn't be an area that I think there's massive headwinds against that. I think growth is going to be really tough. At best, it's going to be a cash cow, and therefore treat it a bit like a declining or melting iceberg or a bond type investment. If you're not going to get growth, frankly, it doesn't cut it for me to a certain extent. I need some top line growth and get margin expansion and operational gearing. I just can't. The headwinds are just too enormous on it.
Yeah, and the PE is only 6.5, and the dividend yield is 16%. Mm. Well, 16% is telling you that dividend's going to be cut.
Yeah,
I can hardly ever see a sustainable dividend of 16%. And I think the other criticism I've got of RWS is that the CEO hasn't really explained what his strategy is. He talks in very flowery sort of almost like some sort of fashionable terms that he's throwing around, but what actually is the strategy? I don't know. It hasn't been explained.
Yeah, well, I think it's basically to adopt AI to then protect itself and use that and be the sort of like one of the only providers who've got sort of like a full AI stack behind it to do it. But the problem is it just reduces the whole value proposition of translation, because if a computer can do it and it costs zero to do it on a computer, then unfortunately your pricing power goes down, doesn't it? Because there's less value add.
They have mentioned pricing pressure actually several times in previous trading updates. So I think those are all very very valid points. So it just has to go into my don't know bucket.
Okay, in the same area, we've got Adam. He's asking about System One, which is basically a software company that I think that helps other corporates predict the effectiveness of their advertising campaigns. You'd have thought it'd be pretty pertinent, actually, coming into Christmas, because it can help people before they spend multi-million pounds doing their Christmas TV adverts for sort of like, the foods and stuff. Then they can predict whether it's actually going to be a success or not. But the last results, they did say their ad testing revenues, which is a vast majority of the business, a decrease like for like by 10%. So they're a bit under pressure. Yes. But what's your view?
Well, there was a very good webinar a few months ago, which I enjoyed, where it was actually the AGM, and they had a shareholder get up and actually read a statement that was highly critical of management. And it was actually really entertaining. You could hear the chairman kind of starting to lose his rag, but then he kind of caught himself and actually apologized. So it was an entertaining webinar. I mean, you've got a substantial net cash pile here. Mm. I haven't got the figures to hand, but you're not paying much above the company's own cash. I do have a few of these. I dipped my toe in with a purchase around £4.50, unfortunately. So I've lost half my money on it now. But it wasn't a high conviction thing, so I only bought a few. I am tempted to top up, actually, but the bid offer spread is too wide. If you're going to get in an instant 10% loss, it's not really attractive. And it should recover. Basically, marketing spend is under a PR and whatever, is under a hell of a lot of pressure at the moment. And they did mention that I think for some of the TV stuff, some of the big supermarkets are rerunning old Christmas ads, apparently, which means that System One doesn't get the testing revenue.
I think it's will a company in the UK with a bit of neat software in ad testing, is it going to dominate this market worldwide against the likes of Facebook, Google, and the big AI guys who have got literally billions or hundreds of millions of consumers out there that they can test these, the adverts or do personalized adverts. And I just think it's actually in the hard bucket, this. And mass advertising is a declining industry. You know, big TV advertising campaigns, yes, they work at in live events, Super Bowls and a bit at Christmas, but overall it's moved to very personalized single individual type, you know, bullet point advertising. So I think their competition or indirect competition is enormous. And it didn't surprise me that when the market softened, still their ad testing business went down by 10%. I'd love to think they're going to be a worldwide leader in it. But I think there's, some pretty big, big gorillas out there that might actually, you know, sort of be a bit difficult to dislodge.
Yeah, I mean, they make very lavish claims for what they do. They say, you know, the payback for clients is absolutely massive. And, you know, they were really bullish. But they basically said ad spending just hit a brick wall in the summer. I think it was August, wasn't it? August, September time. Just they said they've never seen anything like it. The market just collapsed. Yeah. And you had other marketing and PR companies also saying a similar thing, that clients were just turning off the advertising budgets. So I haven't heard anything more recent. Do we know if those budgets are starting to unlock now?
No, well, I think they had a slightly better improvement in October and November heading into some kind of Christmas, but I don't know. It isn't. I haven't got enough conviction either way to decide whether it's cheap for a reason or whether it's actually a value opportunity going forward. I just think when you're competing against such massive, you know, beasts in the market who have wrapped up a lot of the marketing, then I just find that's a quite a difficult one for them to compete against. But one of their USPs could be that they're independent from these big gorillas. You know, they can actually help P&G and Unilever get proper third party, you know, sort of knowledge and verification of what they're doing without being influenced by the big guys. I don't know, but it'd be useful to actually have a chat to the CEO to understand what
I mean, they're claiming that they spent years building this proprietary technology and whatever, and you're paying practically nothing for it, really. The market cap is so low, and you've got the protection of that strong cashed up balance sheet that I'm quite positive on it, actually. I'd be prepared to buy more if I could get a reasonable, not get hit by a huge bid offer spread. I'm leaning more positively towards it as a potential bargain, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a quick comment from Lazar. He basically says that energy prices aren't going down. They're going to go up by 3 or 4 times. If that's the correct, put a reason why, will you? Because I've got no idea why they're going to triple or quadruple.
Oh, maybe it's because this business of demand for electricity. There's a lot of analysts saying that with electric vehicles and with all this AI stuff, and huge explosion in data centers, that there needs to be a massive increase in power generation. Maybe it's linked to that. I don't know.
There may be. Okay, let's move sector. We've got Top Dogger. He's asking about Made Tech, which is an IT service provider for the public sector. They must have come out with something today because the shares are up 25%. In quite a hard market. The shares have really been hit actually from the sort of the lockdown pandemics when they're a bit of a darling, but they've really shot up today. Don't really any quick thoughts on this one?
Yeah, we flagged this before 8 a.m. on my Substack because we've got a neat little AI tool that Alan, one of my colleagues, has written, which means that we can spot the above expectations and below expectations RNSs. We've isolated all of them by about 7:10. So that's how we can get rapid responses out. So, basically Made Tech is trading really well. It was an H1 trading update today. And they say the full year to May 26 will be significantly ahead of expectations. Canaccord, Genuity have raised forecast EPS by 30% this year and 18% next year. So they're trading their socks off by the looks of it, and it's got about a quarter of the market cap in net cash as well. So this looks very interesting, we think. Yeah, we like it. Amber green for us, that's 4 out of 5 stars. Yeah, worth a look, definitely.
What's the sort of, do you know the USPs on it and the sort of competition? Because this is such a tough place.
I don't. I mean, I've heard that apparently I think a lot of it is government focused with Made Tech. I think that's right. And I've heard that that's a really good space at the moment, that apparently the UK government has now unlocked quite substantial IT spending, apparently. So yeah, it could be a good area to look into in more detail. So yeah, we like Made Tech. We think it looks good.
Yeah, I don't think the government has released a lot of IT spend. No, not to, you know. I think what happens is that they've got a whole lot of budgets, and they then push them down to the big IT integrators. But there's a law at the moment that says about 25% must go through to small IT public sector providers, and I think they basically act as a subcontractor to the main contractor for public infrastructure to do certain places. But what you're talking about is that you're the bottom of the food chain, i.e., you're dominated by the contractors. And what's the sort of pricing power there? I don't know. Long term, I think it's a tough space. I think if you're not the prime on it, you're the subby on a subby. Then it's long term, I think it's tough, particularly if the government ever wanted to sort of like say, okay, right, I'm going to reduce the 25% allocation or 30%, whatever it is, to 10% to small cap. Then, God, it'd be carnage, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good question on the margins. I mean, I generally don't buy shares in IT contractors because they're always having to bid for competitive tender and whatnot. And the margins are just, as a result, are quite low. Mm. And you've got large lumpy contract risk as well. So, yeah, it's not an area I personally tend to invest in. But looking at the shares, I mean, they bottomed out at, what was it, about less than 10p, didn't they? A year, no, 18 months ago or more. And they've, quadrupled up to 40p. So, come back a bit more recently, but could be worth a look, actually.
Okay, let's move sectors. We've got sort of technology. We've got Philip. He's asking about Oxford Metrics Group, which I think basically has got two businesses. It's got a sort of like a motion capture business that's been struggling with AI, and the entertainment sector seen a slowdown, and then about a third of its revenues now is generated from smart manufacturing, which is sort of like a visualization and digital twins and data analytics to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of manufacturing. I think this business is growing really, really well, and I think it's still got some cash on the balance sheet. Anyway, what any quick thoughts on Oxford Metrics, OMG?
Yeah, we looked at this yesterday, I think, or Monday. The results came out. The key thing is the cash pile is, here we are, yesterday, 9th of December. The cash pile is 75% of the market cap, and it's totally surplus cash from when they sold a loss-making division for a huge price. So management here seem very shrewd and good deal makers. H1 results. No, full year results to August 25 came out yesterday. The trouble is the growth, a lot of that has come from acquisitions, and that is kind of obscuring quite a significant decline in the core business, which went backwards, the motion capture stuff. And I think there is a question mark on whether this is now old hat, this technology, or not. So that would be the main thing to look into if you investigate it. And the Q1 trading was in line with expectations. Brokers dropped their forecast by about a quarter. That was another negative thing, but it's all going to hinge on what they do with the cash, isn't it? If they're looking for more bolt-on acquisitions, they're doing big buybacks and divvies, but the divvies are not covered by earnings. They're paying it out of reserves. If they do some really cracking acquisition deals, then the shares could do very well, and you're copper bottomed with the cash in the meantime. So on balance, we quite like it. We're maybe a little bit harsh, just calling it amber. That's 3 out of 5 stars. I think it's somewhere between 3 and 4 stars, I would say. So yeah. I quite like it.
Yeah, I could see them actually selling their motion capture division to somebody, a bigger operator, and then redeploying that cash into buying some more of the smart manufacturing that is going like a train. And then you'd get a much higher multiple and a really sort of like focused group just on all that sort of like, and that would benefit from US reshoring. It would benefit from automation. I mean, I think it's quite an interesting special situation, actually. Again, that'd be another one. if I'll have to have a chat to their CEO at some point in time to understand what the strategy is, because I think if you had somebody there who really wanted to, you know, make a name for themselves, you could see quite a bit of restructuring, sell the, because they did, they're pretty good at disposals, because they sold another Vicon business some time ago,
which was a
fantastic price. And they did the same with Motion Capture, because it's got some pretty iconic case studies like Abba Voyage it did. So if it sells
so if you
sell those type of assets and it goes for a decent price and then reinvest it into some really niche, very point solution, but very valuable and with pricing power, smart manufacturing systems that are all going into robotics and automation, I could see this one doing really well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly see more upside than downside on it. Mm. So risk reward, I think, is if you're patient, could be quite good, but it's a little bit in the unknown territory because it all hinges on what they do with the cash, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. We've got Rebecca. She's asking about Me Group. She says quite a lot of volume went through today. And apparently the potential sell of the group has also been called off. Any thoughts on it? The shares are, I haven't seen what the shares have been doing today. They're up, they're down slightly, about 160p.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very good value now. I think it was pretty much likely that the bid talks would come to nothing, because, you know, when it drags on 6 months or something, you think, oh, it's very unlikely to happen. But the value metrics on this look very attractive, I have to say. We like it a lot. PE is just under 11 times. You've got a 5% dividend yield. It throws off loads of cash, so it can pay good divvies, and it's funding its own expansion on the laundry machines, which sounds boring, but it's a very nice growth business, actually, the laundry, because they're situated outside very often in car parks or in petrol station forecourts. So they're paying next to nothing in rent and rates on the sites. And a lot of people who are traveling or are staying in hotels nearby, whatever, actually do use these open air laundrettes. And the return on capital is very good, and they're expanding that fast. And their photo booths business seems to have plenty of life left in it. So I like Me Group. I think it's a good share idea.
Yeah. How do you view, though, where a company has had a failed sort of like sales process? Because optically wise, that says they've pitched it out to a whole bunch of private equity guys, because there's probably not that many trade buyers. But and a whole bunch of private equity buyers, given it's only trading on 11 times PE, that is not a good look, in my view.
No, I agree with you. But it is owner-managed. So with this type of business where Serge, the Krasniewski CEO, owns 37%, so he controls it. And, you know, an owner-founder is never going to sell it cheap, are they?
Right.
You know, in my opinion. And I did hear on the grapevine that apparently they put it up for sale because some family members wanted to cash out. But that was only a rumor. I don't know if that's true or not. But I like it as a standalone business, and you get these lovely 5% dividend yields. And it quite often pays special divvies as well. It's done four or five of those in the last 10 years. So very nice group, I think. Moderately priced, good value.
Yeah, no, you could be right. It might well be that the, you know, the founder, the owner, wants an absolute knockout price. Typically, I would look at it and say, well, if they can't, if a 30% premium to the current price doesn't do the job for them, and they're currently trading at 11 times PE, then that says to me, actually, the smart money is not coming into this anytime soon, unless there's a major catalyst or a change in its growth trajectory. But I mean, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more a buy and hold type of share for private investors. I'm not, and I think the current price that you're getting it at is very good. Very, you know, if you take a long term view on it, and you're collecting your divvies, and it's a growth company that's priced like a value share. So I think it's a very good share idea from that's from Rebecca, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got Peter Whale. He's asking about food ingredients business Tate. He says it's still bumping along near lows. Latest updates seem recent, decent. What's your view about 2026?
I think you know this one better than me. So do you want to start, Paul, and I'll check my notes while you're talking?
Yeah, I mean, I own it and I still own it. They came out with their recent trading update and it was a relief rally. The shares moved up. Where was it? It was basically up to about, that's right, to about nearly £4. They've come back down just as the market's got a bit disinterested. There's a couple of good things that's happened just recently. Firstly, one of the dead weights over the business in its last results was the tariffs, because it exports quite a lot of food ingredients, raw materials, sweeteners and stuff from Brazil or South America into America. And those had, as you know, those had all those big tariffs, particularly 50% from Brazil. But what Trump did a few weeks ago was he didn't want higher inflation on basic foodstuffs that the US have got no chance of manufacturing. So he removed all of that. So they'll actually benefit now. And that's not in the results yet. So it hasn't fed through into the numbers, i.e. that removing the tariff. So it'll make it more competitive. Plus, 90% of their business is now specialist food additives rather than the commodity sweeteners they used to do. The stevia stuff is still going like a train, is really, really good. And they've just made that big acquisition, CP Kelco, which the jury's out at the moment. The market is saying, well, you've got a lot of debt. Are you going to pay it off? If we have a slowdown, if the people changes, you know, sort of if consumer habits and tastes change, then it's going to be a waste. I'm a more of a half is glass full on this one. It's not going to shoot the lights out, but I think these businesses go for really quite high multiples, and I can't remember what it's trading on at the moment, but if I remember rightly, it's at about 7 or just over 7 times EBITDA, and these things go for 12 times, and I would not be surprised if a private equity guy took a chunk out of these, or a trade buyer try to snap them up sometime next year. But I could be just, you know, I could be smoking something, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the ShareScope page up here, and it's forecast PE 8.8 times. Nice dividend yield, 5.5% divvies.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of debt, though. Debt to market cap is 81%, so that's pretty hefty gearing. I mean, doesn't jump out at me as madly exciting, personally. I'd say I'm neutral on Tate.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to... we've got basically affordable housing maintenance guy. We've got Tom, who's asking about Mears, which I think serves a lot of the affordable houses in the UK, which is good, solid sort of like business. But it did get a sort of like a huge boost over the last few years because it's been looking after houses that house all of the asylum seekers.
Yeah.
And that's now been projected to decline over the next 2 years. But they came out with a trading update. They upgraded their expectations for this year because of the decline in the asylum contract hasn't been as fast as they had originally anticipated. But in the round, what's your view?
Well, I don't see any, without getting too political, I can't see any reason to expect the asylum seeker housing bill to go down because nobody seems to have any control over it. So I think that's one of the reasons I'm quite positive on Mears. Well, very positive, actually. We've been green on it since August. very cheap, just really low PE. The latest update was excellent. Traded strongly in the second half to date, at the top end of market guidance. They told us, what was that, 8th of December, 2 days ago. It's trading well. The shares look dirt cheap to me. And you get a yield of nearly 5% as well. It's in an average daily net cash position. So we really like Mears. We think it's good value.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good steady eddy. Affordable housing, it needs constant maintenance, doesn't it? And with all the increasing regulation in terms of environmental and stopping damp for kids and all this sort of stuff, then it should be in a good place. The problem is your customer is never going to pay for these. And what you get is effectively, yes, you can make 5% EBIT margins, but you're never going to make shed loads more because if you do, they'll put a windfall tax on you or they'll hit you somewhere anyway.
Yeah, and actually another standout, that's a good point, another standout feature about Mears is it's been done huge buybacks. In June 2023, so not that long ago, there were 110 million shares in issue. It's now down to 82 million. So that is a ferocious rate of buybacks, which of course boosts earnings per share, doesn't it? So, yeah, I think it's very good, this one, actually.
Good. Okay, we've got a couple of people. We've got Ken Bywater and Carcosa both asking about Restore, which is this B2B services business that allows the public sector and companies to archive financial documents, healthcare documents in big sort of like specialist vaults, usually underground. But then they also do a lot of digital destruction and recycling of electronics and office moves and this sort of stuff. I think they compete against Iron Mountain, the big US provider of similar services. Their CEO came back quite a lot. Charles Skinner, I think his name is. Anyway, the shares have fallen a bit just of late, but they did in July, but they're rallying a bit. What's your take on it?
We looked at this yesterday. My colleague John wrote up a section on it for us we've upped our view on it from neutral to moderately positive. So we've gone from amber to amber green. It seems to be getting its mojo back, basically. They've refinanced the bank facility on better terms, done 7 acquisitions and 1 disposal this year so far. So they've been busy. The digital scanning business, they've identified double the amount of cost savings. They're rationalizing their property portfolio. More of their contracts are now index linked, which is a really important question to ask all management of services companies. I think if they're managing to get index linking of contracts, that's good, and ahead of market expectations for the current year. So all really positive update from it yesterday, we thought, which surprised us. The main drawback is it's still got a bit too much debt's a bit high. We think the valuation's undemanding, and it seems to be getting back on track. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you only get index linking on a B2B services if the contract is more than 12 months, because no customer ever agrees to index linking when they're going to renew it in 12 months' time. They would do it if you're a long-term tenant in an office and you've got a 5-year sort of like, you know, lease, then yeah, you get index linking. And these guys, when they put documents in the ground, they probably put it for 5 years or 7 years, whatever the status is. Very few companies have the pricing power to be able to say we're going to do index link it unless it's a really long contract.
Yes. I mean, yeah, customers are always going to push back, aren't they, and just say, oh, no, we want a fixed price contract. So the fact that they've got most of their contracts, they're now saying, are index linked, I think that's quite a strong message. So, yeah, it's definitely being better managed, I would say, now under the guy who ran it years ago, didn't he, previously?
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got a really small cap. We've got SSCC BFC. He's asking about Thruvision, which I think basically does specialist people X-ray machines that go into retail and stop staff and security guards, but importantly, customers nicking things from the stores and stuff. So you'd think it'd be very relevant, but I think
it's not. It's not for stores. It's for warehouses and airports. Sorry, I'm just punching a password in. Yeah, this is one of my reckless punts.
You mean another one?
Yes, another one. Well, everybody likes a reckless punt now and again. So, what it is, it's got about a year's cash runway, a terrible performing company, absolutely awful. It's done, serial disappointer. And I've bought about 2% of the company. So this really is it's only tiny. But it's basically they've got a live contract with the US Border Force, which is was put on hold because of the government shutdown, but it's still a live opportunity to greatly expand that. And basically, there's a chance we could just get an RNS saying, we've just won a $15 or $20 million contract. So I'm making that figure up, but it's a chunky deal and it's still live. So it's a bit of a binary situation, I think. I'm either going to lose half my money and just dispose of them before they run out of cash, or it could multi-bag if they land the big US contract. And apparently the US are still paying the maintenance of the existing machines. So they've got, I think, 100 or so of these machines, these body scanners in US border, and they like them and they're using them because they're paying the maintenance on them. So it's a bit of a binary bet. on them landing a big contract. I had a chat with the CFO not that long ago. It's a sort of back to basic stripping out cost type of strategy at the moment. Will it succeed? Probably not on balance, but if it does land a big contract, you know, you're into multi-bagger territory. So it's basically just a punt.
Yeah, it could be taken over if it's why.
You could know, be taken over, yeah. Yeah, they did put themselves up for sale not long ago, but for whatever reason, nothing happened, no deal was done. But it is good technology. It's they've won a prison services contract recently. The main point of difference is that these are mobile units, so they're on wheels. You can put them wherever they're needed, so you can move them around warehouses, facilities of any kind, really, and people just walk through them, and it you know, it uses cut imaging technology to highlight things that they shouldn't have, and it's non, you know, it doesn't violate the person's privacy in the same way that some of these machines do. So it's good technology, it works, and they just haven't managed to sell enough of it.
I guess you've got 2%. You haven't used derivatives on this one. You haven't used
biofuel.
Okay, that's makes
no
sense.
I don't want to add risk onto an already risky situation. You know, I do it the other way around. If I'm using gearing, I buy really safe, solid companies like REITs, and then put them on a spread bet, because then you're not doubling the risk. You're it's one or the other. So for a risky punt, I'd just buy them outright in my SIP.
Good man, you had me worried then for a moment. Okay, we've got final. We've just got Sandman-X9Y. He's asking about Northern Bear, which I believe is a contractor. Does sort of is it shop sort of like some contracting or electrical contracting or something like that? But regardless of that, the shares have had an absolute, they've been flying of late from July. I was just looking at it, but it's a fairly small company, market cap about 20 million quid.
Yeah, it has done very, very well. I looked at this a little while ago, and very impressive numbers, performance. I'd say probably up with events now in terms of the valuation, maybe, because it's never going to be on a PE of more than about 6 or something, is it? A contracting business that's doing sort of large lumpy contracts. So I personally wouldn't be interested in getting involved after the shares have just done what they've done. Yeah, tripled roughly, haven't they, in the last few months, this year to date. So yeah, very, very impressive. It's performing well, but for me personally, I wouldn't be chasing it now.
Yeah. What PE is it then? I've got the last 12 months. It's only on 4.5. Actually, I was just seeing.
Yeah, I can't find any forecasts. I was just looking for a forecast PE, but I can't find one. Yeah. But I do remember looking at it a few months ago and being really impressed with the profits. Yeah, here we are. Pre-tax profit, I've got a figure of 5.5 million trailing 12 months. It's doing very well. Whatever they're doing, it's working.
All I would add, Sandman, is that I actually went to a Christmas lunch with a fund manager about 2 weeks ago, actually, or 3 weeks ago, and I bumped into a professional investor, a guy called Nick, and I can't remember what his surname is, but he's got a serious amount of bread. He runs a family office, and his biggest position is Northern Bear, and he was raving about them. And I was thinking, wow, how'd you get in there in terms of a large position, liquidity? But this guy's really astute. He's had great returns. In fact, I think he worked in the city most of his life, and now runs his own sort of family's money. But if somebody as smart as he can be in with a big position, then it ain't a simple contractor. He sees something. I'm with Paul. I haven't done the due diligence on it to really uncover it. But at 4.5 times trailing PE, it does look cheap, I must admit. Mm. But typically, it wouldn't be something would jump at me as being something I'd ever put any money into. But hey, when smart people do, and whether that's like Harwood or whether it's Lawrence Hulse or anybody like those managers, they're not in it, I don't think. But this guy, he is smart. If he's in it, then it means there is something. There's something in there, kernel of.
I know who you mean. I can't see anything wrong with it. Put it like that. I think it's obviously trading well, and that's been reflected in a higher share price. Whether it's got further to go, don't know. Not sure.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, we've been going at it now for just over 80 minutes. Thanks, everyone, for your questions. I've got a big big shout out to my youngest daughter because
yes,
she's getting married, not in the morning, but on at 2 o'clock at Mythe Barn out in Leicestershire on Saturday. And she's luckily the person she's getting married to, he's a chip off the old block. He's a keen stock market investor.
Oh, so, excellent.
I might even get him on these calls with us there to give us a few tips. But anyway, it's a big shout out to them. So anyway, thanks very much, Paul. And same time, same place next Wednesday, 2 o'clock for a Christmas special, shall we do?
Excellent. Paul? Yeah, okay, why Christmas not? Special. We'll have a little glass, we'll have something on the side, a little glass of Prosecco or something.
Sounds good. So anybody's got any really good stocks for next year, they want me us to have a look through them, please put them into the chat bot chat box when we come to do it next week, and we'll have a really good a festive bash.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks then, guys. Goodbye.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.